So the census is the count of everyone where they are, technically census day, April 1st. So on April 1st, don't be a fool, fill in the census, get counted.
All the way back in November of 2019, excitement about the 2020 census was already ramping up for Census Day, at the library at least.
It took a village to get this done, and we're so excited to be kicking off tonight. So let's hear a round of applause for NYC Census 2020's team. Brooklyn, are y'all ready to do this?
That's Kathleen Daniel. She's field director for New York City Census 2020, an organization created by the mayor's office to ensure a complete count of New York City's population this time around.
The lobby at Central Library was full of Brooklynites who had come out to learn more about the census. And of course, this was before our branches were closed. This was before the outbreak of COVID-19. Some had just wandered in, but a lot of other people were showing up because they were interested in getting their communities involved in this great national count that happens every 10 years.
But before that could start, Kathleen wanted to make sure that everyone was on the same page before diving into the importance of the 2020 census.
When we talk about the census, we cannot talk about what is critical in this country without talking about a little of the controversy of our history. So can we go there? Okay, there was a time when people that looked like me were considered 3/5 of one person.
You may have heard of the 3/5 compromise. Our government decided in 1787 that in order to distribute seats to each state in the House of Representatives, enslaved Black people would count for 3/5 of a person rather than one full person.
And so while the Africans who were enslaved in America were not empowered, they were counted as 3/5 of a human being so that they could power the southern states to get more representatives in Washington.
It was a dehumanizing policy, and it's important not to ignore that time in our history when not every person counted. The 3/5 compromise finally ended with the 14th Amendment in 1868, which granted all male citizens the right to vote, regardless of race.
But even then, it wasn't the end of the abuse of the national census. Kathleen talked about during the Second World War when the Census Bureau gave the U.S. Secret Service information that led them to the neighborhoods and homes of Japanese Americans, which in turn helped the government detain thousands of Japanese American citizens in camps during the war.
It is scary to think about, but Kathleen's aim in telling those two stories back in November was to emphasize that the controversial history of the U.S. Census is exactly what makes it secure today.
As a result, your census data, what you give to the census, i.e. your name, where you live, how many people in your household, is now secured. It is bulletproof. The census can no longer share with any agency, not the President of the United States, not the Supreme Court, not any other agency, not NYC Census 2020, with no one, your information.
After World War II, a federal law was passed to ensure that any data connected to a person's name and address be kept private for 72 years thereafter.
So let's acknowledge that over the course of our history, the U.S. Census has been used to marginalize people, and it has been a way to deprive people of their voice.
But today, it's changed. It's one of the most powerful ways that people get to have a voice in this country. So it's more important than ever to fill it out, Kathleen says, to stand up, knowing your information is protected, and say, I am here.
The largest social justice movement happening is right now. This is a matter of your civil rights. Do not let anybody count you out. You have a right to be counted, Brooklyn.
Today, we're getting counted. You're listening to Borrowed, stories that start at the library. I'm Krissa Corbett-Kavoris.
And I'm Adra Ajuse. It's April 1st, Census Day.
I grew up on Brooklyn Avenue. I'm all about being Brooklyn. I'm Brooklyn born and bred. I think Brooklyn is the greatest city in the world.
This is Joanne Kelly. A few weeks ago, we met her at Crown Heights Library.
So I live around the corner from this branch of the. So I'm a mom, I'm a grandmother, and this was our hub. if you didn't want to get on the bus and go all the way to Central Library, this was the after-school spot. The library's always been a safe haven growing up. And your parents, the Caribbean people, they have to know where their kids are at all times. And if they don't know who the people are that you're with, you're not going to be able to go. So if you said you were at the library, that was always like a go. Sometimes you wouldn't be at the library, but, it was a good cover.
Joanne no longer has to use the library as an excuse to her parents, but she was back at the Crown Heights branch because now she's a census navigator for BPL.
It just so happens that at times that the census always timed like at a break when I was unemployed. It just happens like every 10 years I go through a cycle and it's like, here comes the census to save me.
Joanne is working on the census for the third time in her life. She's this year one of 10 new part-time hires at the library, and her job as a census navigator is to answer questions from patrons about what the 2020 census is and why they should fill it out, to help train library staff on how to talk to those patrons about the census, even when she's not there. We met Joanne in Crown Heights because that's one of the neighborhoods she's been assigned to do outreach in.
There's a lot riding on this census, especially for Brooklyn. In the last national census, which happens every 10 years, it's estimated that about 50,000 residents went uncounted in both Brooklyn and Queens. And for a county of its size, Kings County, Brooklyn had the lowest rate of return for mailed census forms in 2010. That's the lowest rate in the entire country.
And adding to the challenges that Adja was talking about back in 2010, Joanne also pointed out that it might be even harder to count everyone this year because there have been all of these significant changes in the last 10 years in our borough, and particularly in her neighborhood in Crown Heights.
There's been a lot of gentrification in this area. I noticed because I would, before I got laid off, I would go to work and come home, and usually it's early in the morning and you didn't see too many people, or late at night and you weren't taking notice of any people. But since July, I noticed I wasn't seeing a lot of people that I used to see on Nostrand Avenue. And I knew gentrification was pushing down, but a lot of people are absent, and I know they're still here, but I don't know where they are.
Joanne brings up a powerful message. People displaced by gentrification and other factors may still be living in the borough, but perhaps in situations that make them hard to count. Situations such as they're sharing an apartment with multiple families, or they're occupying an illegal space, or they're in unstable housing that just makes them hard to reach.
And, you know, the question is, why is it so important to count everyone?
Well, Krissa, the census, as we mentioned earlier, is what determines how many representatives each state has in Congress. And it distributes almost $700 billion of federal funding to programs in every state. But the census also impacts people in a very practical way.
It funds things like where bus routes go. It funds things like the number of garbage cans that are placed on a city block, and where cell phone towers go. Businesses make decisions. They look at census data. They want to say, well, how many people are living in this neighborhood? Should I put my new grocery store in neighborhood A or neighborhood B?
That's Amy Michael.
My full-time job is coordinating the library's 2020 census initiative. It truly is a full-time job.
Amy is the library's head of civic engagement, and it's her job to tell Brooklynites this simple fact.
Well, the Census Bureau says that their mission is to count everybody once and only once and in the right place.
It's really that easy when you get into it. The library is part of a citywide effort to educate New Yorkers about the census, and New York City is investing a lot in this particular census.
My understanding is that could not be more different from the way the 2010 census was approached in New York City. In 2020, New York City is investing $40 million in their census campaign as compared to $0 in 2010.
New York City is making such a huge financial investment because there is a lot on the line for New Yorkers.
There are 16 programs, Section 8 housing, school lunch, Medicaid, 16 programs that impact people directly that are based on a per capita or per person basis.
That last voice is Jeffrey Weiss. He's an adjunct professor at New York Law School and head of the New York Census and Redistricting Institute.
And each New Yorker for these 16 programs alone benefits by $2,687. That's just a small pot of money, but for each New Yorker that is missed in the census, we'd be losing about $3,000 just for 16 programs. You can imagine each of us that isn't counted could be costing New York State thousands and millions more.
And there's a particular need in Brooklyn to let people know about the census and how they can fill it out. Because, as we said earlier, Brooklyn has already a large number of, quote, hard-to-count communities. Actually, 80% of Brooklynites live in a neighborhood that's hard to count.
So let's go through that a bit more. Those hard-to-count communities might be people who speak a language other than English. They might be renters or people who move around a lot. People with multiple generations living under one roof, or roommates living at the same address, people over 65, and people who are undocumented or have reason to be mistrustful of the government. Here's Amy Michael again.
So there's a lot of examples of the types of groups that are considered hard to count, and Brooklyn has a lot of these. That's what makes Brooklyn so great, like the diversity of people living here.
If you start at the Williamsburg Bridge and go to the end of Nostrand, you've traveled the world.
Here's Joanne again.
You've seen every community. You go from Poland, you go from Germany, you go to Italy, but once you come off the Fulton Street, you're in the Caribbean. You're in Trinidad, you're in Guyana.
Libraries are doing a lot of things to make sure those, quote, hard-to-count communities are reached. For instance, all across the country, libraries are partnering with the U.S. Census Bureau to offer information and programming in multiple languages. They're also providing access to the internet so people can fill out their forms online. And lastly, libraries are uniquely positioned to reach out to another population that's hard to count, kids under 5 years old.
Brooklyn has three times as many children under 18 as Manhattan does. And Brooklyn has larger families, especially in the Hasidic Jewish communities.
Last time, about one in five kids were missed in the census.
People don't realize that they should be counting their children on the census form. And children are many times living in these very complicated housing situations.
So kids could be living in more than one household or with different family members. And kids are particularly important because those numbers tell the government where to build schools and how much money to give to Head Start programs in different neighborhoods.
So, you know, in order to really drive this home, to make sure that parents understand and caregivers understand that they've got to count everyone of all ages in the census, BPL is once again using the power of stories.
My name is Tenzin Kalsang, and I'm a children's librarian at the Williamsburg branch, and we are reading the book, The Doorbell Rang. We're going to do some activities, arts and crafts related with the books and also with the census, like counting.
No one makes cookies like Grandma, said Ma, as the doorbell rang. It was Tom and Hannah from next door. Come in, said Ma. You can share the cookies.
We all like cookies, yes. Do you like the count?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's sing a song about counting. This is called 10 Little Friends. One and two and three good friends. Four.
The census, I think, is a really perfect, you know, because it's about numbers. And also because, you know, if you don't count it, then you won't get the cookies, or you know, you can go to the park, or you know, better park, or something like that. So it's kind of, you can relate, you know, to their lives.
So counting is very helpful when you have a plate of cookies to share with your friends and your guests, but there's also a time when counting is very important for our communities. And that is every 10 years during the United States Census.
We are trying to educate our Gen Zs better, so maybe in the future we all have, maybe by next census time, we all have a better count.
Amigos, cuatro, cinco, seis, amigos, siete, ocho, nueve, amigos, diez, amigos, son. Very good.
Aww.
Gotta love a cute story time.
And we just want to say that even though we are encouraging everyone to fill out the census, at the library, our job is to help you fill out the census only if you choose to. We're here to give you factual information about the census in order for you to make your own decision about whether or not you're going to fill it out.
And we get it. People are worried. This hesitation to fill out a government form, it's something that Joanne was talking about.
I think now with the climate, there's going to be a lot more doors slammed in your face.
Before she was a library census navigator, Joanne worked as an enumerator. That's the person whose job it is to knock on doors if people don't respond to the census on their own. She knocked on doors in Brooklyn in 2000 and again in 2010. To get into the big apartment buildings, she had to ring the buzzer and talk to whoever answered.
And you have to explain through the buzzer that you're not ICE, that you're not Homeland Security, that it's hard to give that pitch that I gave to get the confidence for them to open the door to let you in.
And of course, there's a coronavirus pandemic going on right now, and that's another reason that people might not want to open their doors or even be able to open them.
That's why the period that we're in right now is so important. Because if you fill out the form online or over the phone, no one is going to have to come knocking on your door.
Exactly. And in a weird coincidence, this is the first year that the U.S. Census is going to be something you can fill out completely online, which is great for a lot of people, even when we're not in the middle of a pandemic. But there is an issue of access.
Currently, about one-third of households in Brooklyn don't have internet access. And there was a pretty good solution to that. You know, part of the reason that all three library systems of New York City have been such important partners in the effort to help people respond to the 2020 census is that we provide free internet access to every neighborhood in New York City. With Brooklyn, Queens, and New York Public Library, there are over 200 library buildings.
But of course, those 200 library buildings are now closed because of the coronavirus pandemic.
Everything has changed. So much of what the library and nearly any group I can think of that was invested in the 2020 census was focused on face-to-face based awareness.
And so right now, no one is doing face-to-face census training. People can't come into the library to fill out their census or learn about what it is. And Amy and her census team are being creative, as we all are these days.
So, for instance, they already had hundreds of copies of this kid's book that's about the U.S. Census that was in multiple languages. But now they're going to partner with essential businesses like grocery stores and pharmacies to put these books on the shelves so that families can just take them home for free.
Amy's team is brainstorming different ideas to get the word out, even though much is still unknown about how the current pandemic will play out. They're still trying to partner with community organizations in any way possible. Today, on April 1st, you can find a lot of virtual programming, such as story times in multiple languages and social media campaigns that raise awareness about the census.
These are strange times that we're in, but another BPL census navigator, Layla Lau, pointed out that the census is actually one of the ways that she can feel connected to her community.
More so now than ever with the, I guess, a focus on how different and divided we are. That the census was just a very small way of everyone participating in some way, declaring, I'm here, I have a voice. Diker Heights, I think, was my first visit. And I was transported to a different world. They know the patrons by name. After school, all the kids go to the library. These are places where people feel safe, and the census It's about fighting sort of for an ideal of democracy that a lot of us feel like we're losing, that you're counted no matter what as human beings.
A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of talking to our Bookmatch teen group. They recommended a few books to help put the census in context.
My name is Ripley Butterfield. So for the topic of the census, I really wanted to suggest the book Humans of New York by Brandon Stanton. Most people have heard of the Humans of New York series, either from the blog or from the Instagram page. I think a lot of people have seen it. But if you haven't, it's this project where like random individuals on the streets are pictured with their personal story and their words alongside it. Many don't know that there is a book, like a print book though, and it's really cool. It's self-described as kind of a visual census of New York City. And I think that it viscerally shows why everyone counts in the census, because the diversity within even just one city is so immense.
Thank you so much, Ripley. And for our next suggestion.
Hello, my name's Michelle. The book I have is called Who Counts? The Politics of Census Taking in Contemporary America by Margot J. Anderson, Steven Feinberg. It dives into the understanding the historical and scientific context of the census adjustment controversies. There have been a lot of controversies revolving around how the census is done. Donald Trump proposed a plan where undocumented people would have to classify themselves as undocumented on the 2020 census, but he was not able to implement those changes for the 2020 census. This book talks about how the government has tried to implement new changes into the way the census works, and it explains why some of those plans did not work out.
That's excellent. Thank you so much, both of you, for sharing your recommendations.
This is awesome.
Thank you for having us.
And if you're teaching your kids at home, like a lot of Brooklynites are right now, Jordan, another one of our library census navigators, has put together a series of teaching tools for kids of any age to learn more about the census. So that can be a module in your new homeschooling life. You can find all of those on our website, and we are also going to have multilingual virtual programming options from the BPL Census Navigator team.
In the meantime, even as you are social distancing, Amy Michael reminded us that there are still things you can do to help the census effort.
So the number one most important thing to do is sort out your own living situation and make sure you complete to the census. But once you've done that, you know, I challenge every listener to talk to at least 5 people about the census.
Okay, so does talking to you about the census count as one of my 5 people, Adjoa?
Yeah, sure. Check me off.
So you've listened all the way to the end of this episode, and we've got an experiment to share with you. We started a group storytelling project among the staff and patrons at BPL to keep us connected through these crazy times.
Over the course of 3 days, 25 people contributed at least one sentence to a story. No one knew where it was going. It's kind of like the uncertain times that we're in now. Here it is.
In the city, there were only 2 pigeons. Anansi, so nicknamed for his spider-like agility and cunning, despite only having 1 foot.
And Jeff, who always knew where to find the best street food.
In fact, it was just after a particularly good meal of popcorn kernels and breadcrumbs when Jeff and Anansi saw the first signs of trouble.
In the distance, just past the statue of the Marquis de Lafayette, Jeff's favorite place to perch, appeared a bright red and yellow arrow shape in the sky.
Suddenly, the arrow started to light up. "Whoa! What is that?" said Jeff to Anansi.
Just then, Anansi and Jeff found themselves being sucked towards the glowing arrow, their wings contorted and manically dancing to the disco hit, "Stayin' Alive, Stayin' Alive."
Anansi, having been a fan of disco from the time he was still in his eggshell, called out to Jeff, "I don't think it means us any harm, certainly not with beats like that." But he was interrupted when, like a clap of thunder, a voice from the Arrow bellowed its greeting.
"Get in, losers, we're going shopping." Jeff smiled back at Anansi now, comforted by this quote from his favorite movie. "You're right, Anansi. It can't be malicious if it loves mean girls."
The strange pull left Jeff and Anansi right at the point of the Arrow, which seemed to fall from the sky and point to a doorway at the edge of the park that neither of these adventurous pigeons had ever seen before.
Jeff made a beeline to the door, images of supernatural street food and alternate universe pigeons guiding him, until Anansi hopped in his path with an accusatory, "Where do you think you're going?"
Jeff paused. The reassurance he had felt seconds earlier gave way to trepidation. He relied on his friend to keep him safe. After all, they did not become the last two pigeons in the city by following crowds or doing the obvious.
But before Jeff could respond, he was startled by a sudden flutter of wings. Anansi hopped up onto the doorknob, exclaiming, "I'm not letting you get all that good street food first." A tear came to Jeff's eye, because he knew Anansi just wanted to make sure that Jeff was safe, to shield him from whatever evil might lie on the other side of that door. Jeff's heart swelled as he watched Anansi stick his beak into the beak-sized keyhole and turn.
As the door opened, the aromas from dozens of street carts filled the air as glowing banh mi bits, empanada nibbles, cheesy mac morsels, Mr. Softy drips, old school dirty water dogs, and more all beckoned them to enter. "What is this place?" whispered Jeff.
"It looks like some sort of street food fair," Anansi said with an odd voice, and while looking around and noticing other entryways all around them, added, "an interdimensional street food fair."
As Jeff and Anansi started forward, intent on finding the Mazarepa cart, the magical door swung shut behind them, and a sound very different from the Bee Gees filled their pigeon ears.
Staccato screeches filled our pigeons' ears, raising their already high pulses as they recognized the song of their arch New York City nemesis, the peregrine falcon.
The menacing sounds of the falcon became a vision as the great bird swooped and landed before them, grabbing a dirty water dog with a claw and tearing into it, its cobalt black eyes boring into the pigeons all the while. Anansi took one look at the falcon's piercing glare and the slight smirk in its bent black beak and chuckled. It was Regina, yet again. "Hello, boys," said the falcon, tearing off another bite. "We can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way."
This wasn't the first time Regina had made this ominous threat to Anansi and Jeff. She seemed to be watching far too much crime television lately. But before Anansi and Jeff could even begin to wonder what the falcon meant by this, Regina's eyes widened as she realized she had made a grave mistake, biting into that particular dirty water dog.
Regina tried to swallow her bite, but it was no use. The dirty water dog was lodged in her throat. She began to make anxious, fluttering movements with her wings.
"Ah, someone save me, help! I promise never torture and taunt these pathetic sons up." Silence. They had finally witnessed this evil wench being dethroned in the most unexpectedly dark yet laughable way possible. "Ding dong, the witch is dead," quipped Jeff and Anansi.
But just as Regina's lifeless wing drooped to graze the lukewarm hot dog water, an ominous rumbling began, and the hissing sound of steam escaping.
One of the street food vendors was cutting into the fragrant, warm crust of a massive pie, out of which flew hundreds of pigeons.
The flock flew around them, forming a tornado with Anansi and Jeff in the center. "They're origami pigeons!" shouted Anansi.
The only two pigeons in the city watched, first afraid and then relaxing, as they were surrounded by their whirling, papery brethren. Sunlight glinted off of disco balls, and Donna Summers began to sing "I Feel Love" as everyone spilled back out onto the streets.
Amazed at the size of the crowd,
the two pigeons spread their wings, flying high above the crowds, flying wild as if they were dancing to the beat of the music. Reflecting back, Jeff turns his beak towards his friend. "Hey, amigo, aren't you surprised how we've made it through the most difficult times together? I'm so thankful to know, mi amigo, that two pigeons together can do more than one very good-looking pigeon alone." "Mira, Jeff, don't get sentimental on me," shouts Anansi as they fly on their journey to the next adventure.
Virginia from Clinton Hill, Brooklyn.
Adra from Flatbush.
Krissa, Sunset Park.
Fritzi Bodenheimer, the Financial District.
Jack Kavicki, Crown Heights.
Hasina from Queens.
Lee Fox, Ditmas Park, Brooklyn.
Alex Trediak, Manhattan, New York.
Louisa, Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Brenna Tucker, Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
Raquel, Kensington, Brooklyn.
June and Mandy, Windsor Terrace, Brooklyn.
Charlie, Kensington, Brooklyn.
Ellen Holiday, Marine Park, Brooklyn.
Isabella Barry, Westchester, New York.
Mariah McGrath from Prospect Heights, Brooklyn.
Alexa Orr, Kensington.
Rachel Tiemann, South Slope, Brooklyn.
Sarah Egan from Crown Heights, Brooklyn.
Cassie Hickman from Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Mari Garcia, Washington, D.C.
Abby Garnett, Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Lisa Goldstein from Sunset Park, Brooklyn.
Carolina Durquijo, Downtown, Brooklyn.
Melissa, Kensington, Brooklyn.
Luz Acevedo, Old Mill Basin, Brooklyn.
All right, I gotta say, I did not see that coming, though that was delightful.
Definitely a wild ride, that story. And listeners, this is something you can do with your friends to stay connected during this coronavirus outbreak. It doesn't require too much tech. All you'll need is a smartphone with a voice recording app and an audio editing program. There are a few free options out there. We've posted our own guide to group storytelling in the show notes.
And, you know, we are librarians, so we feel duty-bound to tell you that this idea is actually really old and goes back to the 14th century epic called the Decameron, which was a long book by Giovanni Boccaccio that has been making a little bit of a comeback recently. The Decameron was this text written during the plague in Italy, and the premise of the book is that this group of 10 friends had escaped to the countryside to actually avoid the Black Death, and they are telling each other stories to pass the time. It's that original idea of a meme, and it was 100 stories to be exact.
Borrowed is brought to you by Brooklyn Public Library and is hosted by me, Adwa Aduse, and Krissa Corbett-Kavoris. You can find a transcript of this episode at our website, bklynlibrary.org/podcast.
Borrowed is produced and written by Virginia Marshall with help from Fritzi Bodenheimer, Jennifer Prophet, Meryl Friedman, and Robin Lister Kenton. Our music composer is Billy Libby.
Borrowed will be back in 2 weeks. Until then, fill out your census.